Welcome to Articulate Warbling with Zach Ferguson. I am your producer and editor, D.B. Spitzer. This week, Zach's going to be talking about something. I just got over being sick, so I am mass producing, mass editing a whole bunch of episodes with Zach and Laura, talking about all sorts. Schofield, and some book reviews and some movie reviews all coming up on Articulate Warbling in the next 2-3 weeks. So I hope you enjoy these episodes. I hope you're having a good spring. If spring's coming your way, don't forget daylight savings time at some point in time in the near future if you live somewhere where there's daylight savings time. And remember, it's not a rant. It's Articulate Warbling with Zach and Laura. All right, here we go with those guys. People, folks.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of It's Not a Rant, it's Articulate Warbling with me, I, the warbler in question. Today, Laura will not be with us, so all of you sickos out there, pumping your meat piece.
Oh, woman voice.
She isn't here, so pump that piece of meat, make it a meat feast in dedication to myself and the books I will be reviewing on today's episode. Now, I want to start this episode by reviewing a book I've just finished. I've been aware of this writer for a while by being a writer myself, an experimentalist, and on the social medias. And this is Amygdalatropolis. Fuck, even it's broken down in its base aspects, almost phonetically, in such a strategized ways on the cover. It still gets your tongue tied. Now, I've allowed it to settle. Upon reading it, and after reading it, I delved head full on into a review for Goodreads, of which I'm going to use as notations and starting points. But since it's really dawned upon me, and I've read a few specific interviews pertaining to this particular piece in question, it's very apparent that B.R. Jaeger is a powerhouse of many ideas, and the fluctuation and the relationship of narrative flow, how everything juxtaposes and deposes and overtly destroys. B.R. Jaeger has completely ruined me with this book. It doesn't take away the fact that this book is beautifully written and it has layer after layer of study, but it's parasitic, much like the cover art of parasites eaten away from within, from without, of an intestinal tract. It is layer and layer upon of study, analysis, satire, poetics, and the strangest of places, and from the weirdest of topics and issues garnered all around the social media platform, the forums, the dark web, the real recesses of villainy online. This book is awfully dangerous and far too close to comfort for me when it comes to the nature of its material and its point and its narrative strands and threads corresponding with each other, with the different styles and different formations and different perspectives and its overall reasoning to exist. It is an evil book, but evil is inherent in all of us. But even those of us who think we are the purified and the preachiest of them all. But an evil you're compelled to read and participate in. And the real strength of this and power is it's not distance. You are in there, this quagmire of just awfulness, horrible attitudes. Many might say right-leaning, some may say overt left-leaning. There's no politics here. It is just a raw analysis and story about perversion of humanity, perversion of platforms, perversion of narrative, perversion of life. It is corruptible to one who is already has a screwed up disposition or position in life or mentally. This is a hard and truthful delve into the heart of true sickos, and not just sickos in themselves, but people who partake in admittedly posing unanswerable such questions that, you know, this book has me tongue-tied. It has me rather speechless because it's working on so many planes of analysis, study, and storytelling. It is the most beatific harrowing experience that you'll read. It is like one harrowing themselves to look at the latest expose online. And it is corruptible, it is parasitic to an already fucked up mentality. Not everyone is normal, but if you're of a position where you think you're quite, you know, secure, this book really shows you the evil, and there's no comfort or distancing of it, subjugated up on where the source is coming from. There's a compulsion to read these horrible things and this substructure of serial killers and their monologues and their internal journalistic diarised ways. And now with the platform of social media, everyone has to be opinionated. Everyone has to be out there, even the true embodiments of the detriment of being human. It is delving into nasty, inhumane, admittedly self-confessed, not nihilists, but perverts, but not just perverts of the nature of snuff movies, but perverts who get the kick, and it makes you almost part of this corruption. It's not an easy read. And in a lot of ways, it's experimental in how it captures online forums, comments, threads, linkages, the infrastructure and substructure and overall encapsulation of what it may be like to be on such forums. We've been on forums talking about movies, and there's always that person who harries out their opinion, and it's all disjointed. But the writer, B.R. Jaeger, said something that was very interesting to me in a recent interview with 3AM magazine. He says, "I did not want a megatropolis to somewhat reflect the experience of being online. I did want an amygdala-tropolis to somewhat reflect the experience of being online, of scrolling through and between content, having multiple threads alternating, which this book does superbly, separated by left and right text alignment as though they were separate tabs or windows open on a desktop." And he masterfully portrays that and exemplifies that. To do that on a platform that is a paperback, to capture that distance, glossy, modernistic divide and sensorium, such as being online on an iPhone, on a tablet, on a laptop, it is ingeniously done, but it's somehow more intimate. You're more intimate with a book, and that transcribes certain interrelationships with a book and form and experience and sensoriumization of yourself. It makes it ever so more intimate. I'll continue with the quote. Excuse me. And I've just lost my place. See, I'm all over the place. But this is another one. This is a minor point. This is what B.R. Jaeger had to say. But I would argue that the presence of this kind of text in the narrative creates a reading experience that's more reflective of the way we all read now. Also, I'm adding in my opinion, Zach Ferguson, the experience of how we type out comments and type out this raw, uncensored need to offer out our experiences or our opinions or our own sick, intrepid idealizations and ideals and morals. And back into B.R. Jaeger's interview, by rapid visual scanning and by precisely not reading. And that is what encapsulates this book to a finer point, and it's very apparent in the experience whilst reading, but whilst outside. It's a layer upon layer of real, raw, uncensored ingenuity. It's something that a lot of people could easily ascribe to, oh, it's easy, this stuff is available readily online. But what B.R. Jaeger does is he captures it, the mentalities, the variant of personalities. Each person is saying the same thing, but they all have their own take. It's all unedited, all rushed out, all vitriolic, and it's just an emblem. It's emblematic of social media platform. It speaks upon more of the mind and disease that is social media, and given space and room for these types of characteristics and personalities than the people in question. It's almost saying, is social media almost malforming these people or giving them an inclination or offerance to be that type of characteristic? The book is also poetical. It's also very fractured, but defined and definitively for me is subliminal in its corrosiveness. It's just so fucking disturbing, unnerving, disjointed, it's poignantly nihilistic, violent in its deposition, and its far too truthful display and example and caption of real evil that, as I've aforementioned, that's inherent and hiding in the dark realms of online strata. Or even people for whom we may pass in the streets or even acknowledge, give the time of day for, are they of this caliber, and you just don't know anyone ever truly, do you? This isn't nihilistic in its aesthetic and artistic expression, but the exploits what nihilism can transcend and ultimately be male-formed into. It's analytical, the truly ill of mind and soul, and the very juxtaposed interrelationship and pairing and duality that is the intrusive, corruptible, eerie and powerful, far too fucking real, veering into non-fiction while was also allowing some respite in its warped pseudo-fictional manner execution, combined with the reality of social media and platforms offered and how we experience them, and execute them and abuse them. It's capturing what one assumes a person of such a perverse and perverted nature is like online, tapping into something that of which we all have witnessed or seen exemplified, whether it's via media, online, in print, whether seen by segment of the types of comments made by individuals online partaking in such sickness, whether we've witnessed it by having such shared online in screenshots on those online vigilante groups and where they set up stings and deliberate incidents to verify and vilify rightfully and verify that these people are of ill intent. Or if it's on the journalistic side where we are exposed to this and with that comfortable distance where someone's had to do the deep digging and dirt and we're just showed the exploits of their hard work, of their deep delvings of his or hers winning expose and article, we'll have been party to the realities of what people get up to online via articles, all these documentaries, all out on Netflix and various platforms online, still party and part of that ever-evolving reality of the social media platform. Were these people and attitudes and characters are unveiled via the comments put out there from themselves, from this person or that person? And we are lucky in that we are always distanced by this manner of exposure. Whereas this book, you are in there. These dark spaces, these secreted depths of malevolence, of comments and forums, where they are as a whole united by their sick wants and obsessions and inhumane tastes, sharing and particulating and circulating snuff videos, sick uploads of dark web imagery, of potential child pornography, which is heavily, explicitly hinted upon but never detailed, luckily enough, but I would not put it past BIA to go beyond and try his hand at exposing that reality and that uncomfortable sickness. It's about the correspondence, and not so much a correspondence, a disconnect from social media. It's not a social media platform. It is corruptible and it is parasitic by nature. It's corruptive, seedy, malicious, atrocious. All of this, such like these characters and these realities and these people who are out there on the dark web doing these things, their purviewings, is similar by trait and design by our purviewings, just vicariously or through third parties or through the distance and circulatory of journalistic expression and exposure. All online. And it is scarily and intimately captured and recreated here in this book. It shows, exemplifies and captures them, these perverts, these twisted characters, for what they truly are. You are part of it, here in an all-too-revealing close proximity and fashion. It is ingenious and fucking terrifying. This is an assault and read. As you feel the slime, the evil, the mania, the darkness creep out, you feel awful for reading on, and it makes you feel dirty. You are partaking yourself. It makes you feel complicit almost by previewing these fictional pieces that are so true to the actual types of characters living out their sordid lives online in such a way. Even though it is purely fictional, you feel awful, you feel corrupted, and you perhaps feel as evil. Whereas these people have no conscience. They may be hyper-analytical about themselves and aware that we like this sick stuff, but they don't really see the real inherent dormant evil that they're personifying and the procreation of social media platforms and the abuses amassing. It's also undercut with a dark liquid comedic energy and irrelevant and sharp and bitter satire that it's like acidic bile. You're trying to swallow it down, and it's centred on a a recluse, a person only referred to as 1404er, That's how I pronounce his name, which a lot of other people on this specific website, specific dark web page, all go under. And we're with this one 1404 who is a recluse, hasn't left his room in 6 years, has a strange alternate routine-like relationship with his mother and father, specifically his mother, who later in the book he starts obsession and envisioning having sex with, being confined, not having that, living his life through the computer and through these faux emotions and realities, and also these horrible realities of such smut and filth and vitriol and evil amassed in video files, images. It's a precise experience. It's a hodgepodge of narrative threads juxtaposed, illumined in certain other aspects. This book is dense of intent and purpose and message, and it's also vastly cosmic too. Horrific, psychologically assaulting, disturbing, hilarious, odd, scathing, and deftly and bravely handled by Jaeger. What I've spoken upon hasn't even skimmed the surface, but this book has been the most difficult I have had to read in a very long time, and to process and to give thought to it anymore leaves me spewing more hyperbole than I necessarily need to. But I will go on, because this book deserves it. It deserves that study analysis. So much has been garnered and put into this. A lot of people could evenly, offhandedly say, oh, anyone can write this type of book. No, there's a deftness and a subtleness and a ingenuity that B.R. Jaeger has applied here, with not just research, but with the dense levels of introspection, societal implication, societal malformation. It captures that experience of what we all go through when online, purviewing in forums and threads and comment sections on Facebooks, on Twitter, on Instagram, or except this is pitted in the darkness that no one really ever within themselves want to even discover or reach on out for, just to see what it's about. Not in a sick, perverted sense that they might like it, but a sick, perverted sense to think, how easy is it to go there? With this book, you don't need to do that, and there's a numerous variant of amounts of links contained in this book, almost offering you, daring you, dare you look at this, dare you look at this and be repulsed and be horrified by it, dare you be as brave as I have to implement this faux reality, this non-fiction, this pseudo-fiction. And some people online have admitted, I've tried the websites, they're not existent, they are fake. Of course they fucking are, because then it would make B.R. Jaeger the person in question, unless from a journalistic analysis side of things, as well as to the people who partake in it, and as are sick and corruptible. But it shows that the dark recesses of the web themselves, these videos, they are making their way onto the most streamlined, mainstream levels of platforms. You will find videos of beheadings, ISIS propaganda on Twitter. And that's when it gets taken off, and then its life is evolved into the darker recesses of social media and the online verse. It is a book about message boards, the certain calibre of people that you purview and analyse and study. People that actually stop you and make you pause and go, you exist? Do you actually think like that? Or is this all a front? But applying it to the darker verse, the darker recesses of that very vague and uncomfortable place that only you give permission to journalists or people of an authoritarian position to look at and go. It's not our jobs to do that. And B.R. Jaeger makes a great satirical observation of this, and not just specific to the dark web, but in general, people who get a kick out of weird, obscure videos, not of a cinematic or artistic variety, but people going out their way to be evil, such as Don't Fuck With Cats documentary that masterfully B.R. Jaeger alludes to before that documentary itself was out there. So this story and this information, this conglomeration of happenings and incidents are already there for the taking for those who are savvy to it. I am very uncomfortable about the dark web, about people who search out snuff video. It makes me uncomfortable, and reading about it and being forced and almost being a participant in it in such a way of this book is the ingenuity of it. It's Amygdalatropolis, which Amygdalatropolis is a masterpiece, a real great, not just satire, but a monologue, analogue, study, journalistic, metaphysical, pseudo-nonfiction, pseudo-real fiction, pseudo-observational comedy, expose of the detriment of not just online forums and the online platform giving space and room for such vitriolic, hateful, nasty, twisted, corrupted, parasitic formations wasted as human breath. But there's something a lot more, even more intimate and delicate, touching upon our main antagonist, protagonist, as 1404, is he evil? Is he true evil? Is he a participant? Is he partaking? Is he implicit? Is he part of the problem? Or is he just another little cog, part of the cogs and webwork and pistons and the whole mechanics of it? I don't know, there is so much here to dissect, but I think read it on your own terms and then flit between different interviews where B.R. Jaeger really goes into great depth, informing you on to certain things that may have been niggling or may not have come across in such an extent. It's a book that you may have to read more than once. I am not willing to read it more than once because it unnerved me that much. But with this source of information and place, I will go into it again because it is a masterful, modernistic piece of social commentary. And I will have to give it 5 stars. It is a sensational read. I utterly adored it. I'm sorry that I've been fumbling and mumbling, but it's one of those books that it made me uncomfortable. It got under my skin. I felt dirty. I felt raw. I felt almost as if I was highlighting these links available in the book and searching them out myself to try and prove to myself that this stuff exists out there. It's actually out there. And that scares me more than anything. The human condition, what can be pushed towards, and not the fear of, oh, I might like it, I might turn into one of these sickos, but that thing of being exposed to something that you can't unsee. I've seen death in my time, I've seen beheading videos, and that was enough for me. A friend going, oh, hey, look at this. The book has put a real transmogrification of all emotions, all analysis, all studies, the whole emblem of the misappropriation of social media's platforms, forums, you fucking name it, and then some. 5 stars. I recommend you read anything by B.R. Jaeger. 5 stars. Now, next review is for Holy Land by Rowan Klasnick. Ah, the rattle, the deep, deep hubristic, almost egotistical rumble and rattle and boiling of electronic kettle. There's something rarefied and beautific in it. There's something familiar. It's a little bit comforting to you. Today, I shall be reviewing. I know, it's been a while since I've reviewed. The as-promised review for Desk Clerk will be included here in this episode. But this one, I hadn't anticipated to have such a reaction. I'd read something by Rowan Klasnick, which he kindly sent a spare free copy of. Let's say a reviewer copy. It makes me feel a little bit more singular and distinctive. And then as a thank you for my having read it, having reviewed it, he sent me another book called Holy Land. And I hadn't anticipated such a strong response. I'd said that I'd probably review it, and I ended up, after the initial read, of devouring it. I did. I devoured it. I broke into it, and I loved it. And I reviewed it on Goodreads. I don't even think Rowan Klasnick is aware, but the segments of this review I wish to share with you. And Holy Land is a beautiful, beautiful book. It's powerful, provocative, sensual, deep and dense, and the subtlety lies heavy within the confines of the short 3 to 5 line pieces. The prose is almost triangulated, that dominate their own space on a page, but all that much so with that added levity and whereas room. Whereas even before said piece is finished or story and depths and truths of the piece are delivered, heavy hangs the sharp, haunted images So masterfully constructed and prosaically defined, I imagined myself conceiving of them visually, as I do when I listen to music. I think it's to do with the autism and the creativity. Like it took years for me to appreciate music on a lyrical level, not lyrical in the sense of defining something or offering praise, but the actual lyricism, the actual lyrics. I visualised things as short, fast-cut trailers or what could potentially be a good film. And reason needs, I found myself imagining these pieces a short 25 to 30 second short tone poem experimental films. And I'm starting to really believe in the art and power of poetry more than I have ever before. And honestly, I feel so ashamed for being so blinkered and dead set against it due to the academia and the trash we were bottle fed to ingest and percolate in English from even the young ages of 3 to 4. The rhyming, the childlike wonder, the rat and the cat. Oh, they sat, that type of thing, and then into the more densely compacted hyperbolic trivia and trivial and drivial type stuff that you're forced to analyse. The more I read poetry, which has only been awakened in me since starting my podcast, the more I understand the power of the strengths offered in not just the writing, but the avenues opened in oneself when reading. And this has been especially accessed and almost cut into me by something as strong and sharp and great and penetrating as his prose is, by Klasnik's. For me, Klasnik has redefined poetry for myself, and especially in what is offered in such cases as assumed therapeutic parameters and the spaces and metaphysical dimensions offered by writing such prose poetry. In a lot of ways, his stuff is extremely experimental in so many ways, and it is oh so fucking powerful. I'm so relieved we have the likes of Ryan Klasnik to open the eyes of someone such as myself, to educate, not in breakdowns or lectures, but by proof in the pudding, by the work in of itself, that it isn't a defined thing or more confined to teacher monologues and set it into that one cliched place. Evidence is here in holy land, that it is a still evolving place, simmering, bubbling, staining and corrupting, going beyond that generalised sense to poetry and its meaning, and the manics behind writing it, as not so much taught and what was bullied into us at school. Oh boy, it's liberating. Freedom, explosive in its subtlety. And this book breaks down that supposed saint-like history, prose sometimes lyrical, a red herring to what one anticipates is swathing and falling to the dull romanticised realm of poetry I so hate. Then it is completely corrupted, either subverted its short-form tale or in its overall subservice, prose, aic, contained self and peace. It is almost such a mundanised place in literary and legacy and reputation poetry, specifically to form and rhythmic beats and that almost puritanism and specificity. Of course, people look down upon poetry as a lesser device for expression and creativity, but with artists like Klasnik, we need not worry. And also, that expectation at least lends a greater weight and appreciation to this ugly, intrusive battering of pure sexual anarchy and repression, where brushstrokes break skin and blood muddies the overall all-paints construct and structure, with delicate touches of introspection, calmness, just to fuck you with you a wee bit. Holy Land is a sensational piece of prose poetry, and I will have to give it 5 stars. Phenomenal piece. Look, I really feel like I can't cut this review short. There is a lot going on, the domestic abuse, the current climate, the current Me Too movement. There's a lot of things and factors, the social media trends, the social anarchies, the social evolutions, the movements and the current climes and the you know, the necessary things that need to be told, stories told about domestic abuse, about abusers. It is an allegory and a metaphor and a great construction and idea. You can see it. Maybe I am just probably a little bit because there is an effectiveness. It did ratchet up tension, but it all seems undercut due to certain audience members' reactions. So reflecting on it, I probably might enjoy it, but I didn't like the clinical look. Benjamin Wallerfish's score is bombastic, so there's a reason it is leading up to that. It is tapping into you molecularly. I know that Lee Whannell is a powerful director, and I might enjoy this watched on my own terms in my own space, but this film, these types of films, sadly encourage the worst audience members. I don't think I've really ever had that much of an effective cinema experience with a horror, apart from Evil Dead, Fede Alvarez's 2013 pseudo-reboot, pseudo-spiritual sequel, and A Quiet Place. But those films kind of force you into your seat, whereas there's the quietness of this film and the framing and the long tracking shots. Like, the opening of this film is sensational. It is. But just because it's got a sensational scene, everything thereafter, I just can't... It's the rapturous and overt obnoxious reactions from the general audience that put me out of it. I couldn't entwine. I was easily distracted. I couldn't really be swelled by it because of those people around me. If I watched it on my own or just me and Laura, I might appreciate it. But the cinematography was off with me. Maybe later in the film, I may lose something. I feel one cannot judge a film unless they watch it from beginning to end, unless it's sort of a Uwe Boll or Tommy Wiseau caliber. I can easily watch The Room by Tommy Wiseau. But with clips and with some connotation behind it or analysis of or reaction, but I have to watch this again. So this isn't a review or even a mini review, it's just an observation. I recommend that maybe when it dies down, recommendation to myself and Laura, we give it a try again, or we just watch it on Blu-ray when it's released. Certain movies that are horror just don't get their just desserts or due diligence. People may go, oh my god, it's terrifying. Well, because you went in there and were willing to flinch and jump. Like, even when the fucking adverts cut to another Pepsi ad, everyone's going, oh, ah, oh my god. It's just like, shut the fuck up, calm down. There is cinema etiquette to maintain here. It was like, oh, this is just an excuse so we can jump up and be part all together in this amassed unification of sphere. Also, I really want that gothic 1930s, 1800s era Invisible Man. The aesthetic, the subliminal steampunk aesthetic that back then wasn't even known as steampunk, but you can see allusions to it. I'd love a Guillermo del Toro, The Invisible Man, or even another director like Fede Alvarez or a newcomer. I just would love to see that, where it's a character piece, whereas they are something with this, they're making it modern and they're making it concurrent with societal issues, with the current climate online, with what is going on with voices, movements. It's done in a clever way in that respect, using it as an allegory and a point of view and a positioning to tell a broader story within the confines of a genre piece, which is the luxury and power of genre. But this was a taunt thriller, not your classic horror film. And taunt thrillers need the due diligence and cinema etiquette and behaviour for you to fully appreciate it. So if you've got people jumping at the slightest of... Like, I think even Elizabeth Moss, when she does blink, people are like, oh my god! And a lot of people can go, oh, it's all deliberate, it's all set up. Yes, and maybe I'm giving short shrift for Elizabeth Moss, but I've never gravitated to her as an actress. And I feel a lot of people come into this just because they've got fanboyish bias notions. I know she is a good actress. I've seen her in a variety of films. I loved her in Us. I really liked her small role in High Rise by Ben Wheatley. But this, I know that she was working on a certain level, but it kind of came across as hammy, but maybe I wasn't in my mind, right mind frame. So this is a review of The Invisible Man, but more about cinema etiquette and about how to fucking behave and being in the right frame of mind and with the right audience. So this isn't even The Invisible Man review. Like, I've given it short shrift. I'm not giving it its dues, and I can't dues because I haven't watched it all. But I just want to clarify, I'm not really reviewing it. I'm just telling you that it was not a good experience. Me and Laura just had to walk out. It was infuriating. So I'm outside having a cigarette. So mind the atmospherics, the high winds, the pitter-patter of rain. It might add atmosphere to this podcast. Far more atmosphere than the clinical, steely, ugly, modernistic 50 Shades of Grey cinematography-fied fucking shit that was The Invisible Man, directed by Lee Whannell with the Blumhouse Productions. I was very excited at the prospect of a Johnny Depp-led 1930s, harkening back to the 1933 version of James Whale's The Invisible Man, the only Invisible Man that I truly love. The gothic aesthetic, the campness, the nicheness, the characterization by Claude Rains, whose voice, a physical personification, and cut out, and the makeup and the design and the art and the production. James Whale's The Invisible Man is his greatest film, in my opinion. This is most undervalued, underserved, underappreciated. I love its gothic sensibilities. I love the era it's set in. I love the just the whole visual accumulation, the aesthetic, the design, the edit, the cut, the story, the playfulness. And then when this big, bad, dark universe, starting with the action-packed The Mummy... God, fucking Stephen Sommers' The Mummy films had more tribute and homage and just genuine love and care and affirmation for these universal monsters. The Mummy was just a project for Tom Cruise to run about as per usual. They really wanted to kickstart this huge, big blockbuster franchise. Universal wants a dark universe. Universal monster multiverse, and it sank ship. But the prospect of Johnny Depp starring in a rather lo-fi $30 million production, it's like, come on, Johnny Depp is desperate to get whatever work is out there now, sadly, due to the whole Amber Heard shit. And anyone who knows me knows I called that shit as soon as they got together. I knew that gold digger and that person who has history years dating back before she met Johnny Depp, or false accusations, and enabling herself to use her platform as a woman and a feminist and anything and everything that she personifies, a pretty blonde initious girl who's tough and bisexual and owns it, is an abused state. It's not that hard to gather past experiences and gather past information to know that Amber Heard is a bit of a twisted bitch. Great actress, really loved her in Aquaman. Always petitioning to get rid of her. It's like it's one and done now. She's done the hurt, she's done the crime. Johnny Depp probably had a hand in the disintegration of the relationship, but everything that the media streamlined, it was just vilifying Johnny Depp for the sake of it. So, back to the point, we could do a rather lo-fi movie, and it could really reinstall that Johnny Depp as a leading man and as a character actor. I really could imagine him paying tribute to Claude Rains' performance and vocalizations. Johnny Depp is a very brave actor. Sometimes niche-y, sometimes coke-tastic, sometimes it just doesn't work like his character in those Kevin Smith films. Tusk, forgivable. Yoga hoses. I was looking forward to that. A shared universe. Javier Bardem as Frankenstein. Bill Condon finally getting to reimagine Bride of Frankenstein. The epitome of cinema to him and his first and great love. A fellow James Whale fan. And then they were like, back to the drawing board. Let's start small. Who's doing really well for us with the budgetary things? Small budgets, big box office revenue. Jason Blum. Blumhouse? Yeah? Well, isn't that a logical step and direction to go? Though Lee One Hour said it's not part of any Moteverse. It was just an initial pitch to just do our own thing. We can see this is going to spread into a Moteverse, though not narrative thread entwining to each other's stories, but under that label. Because eventually Jason Blum's studio, these low-budget films that make good use of their low budgets, no higher than $5 million, usually dependent on what other co-production company is heading and sidling alongside its production money filtering. I was really excited. I love Lee Whannell as a creator, as an actor. But this film is ugly. It's hollow. Mind the pun, Hollow Man. Which is far more interesting aesthetically. Now, like, Hollow Man is a remake of The Invisible Man, but just on that Paul Verhoeven erotica, kind of pseudo-rapey gore fest level. This film is dull. This film is ugly. It's bland. It's not a ratcheting up of tension. It's just a giving an excuse for fucking audience members to amp themselves up so when a shot cuts to egg and bacon, they all go, ah! No. No, 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 no. No. The Invisible Man encourages the worst of audience members, young people who are wanting to go there to mess together and just scream at any old thing. And then when initial shocks happen, or visual moments that do happen, they're just shrugged off and not noticed because they're just there for that horror experience. But I feel that if I watch this movie alone, I may see a little bit of worth in it, but there's a big bombastic score by Benjamin Wallerfish. The film is just hollow. It is samey. It is just fucking awfully photographed. Elizabeth Moss and her agape, wide-eyed performance. There's no density. Everyone's imbuing this new worth of her because of her popularity due to the Handmaid's Tale or the whatever the fuck this series is. Oh, she's really good in that. Oh, she's going to be masterful in this. Oh, she had such density and levels. Yes, she's good in some moments, but the most of it, she's just over-egging it. But because due to her new liveries and popularity, everyone's imbuing it with what they want to imbue it with. The film, within an hour, me and my partner looked at each other. We weren't having a good experience because it was the wrong cinema goers watching it, as will be with every fucking viewing. So I might give it a rewatch upon release, but from what I got from watching it there and then, I just wasn't connected to it. And maybe it's to do with my inclination and real fanboyish love for the original, or maybe because the film is just bland. It's not creative, it's not unique, it's not trying to find its own visual aesthetic. It's samey, it's glossy, it's Hollywood. It's Hollywoodified, just the way it's shot and framed. Tension notched up for what? A few jump scares? Jump scares that may be effective for general audiences or general people who are just there willing to be, you know, given an excuse to be obnoxious and loud and just fucking have this endless fucking commentary. So, It's just shit. I can't really summarise it up anymore. The standard is spoken. Just trying to find something to pick at, but there's nothing there. It's just dull. Overall, it's crap. I can't even rate it. I'm going to have to give it a rewatch within the confines of my own space, my big widescreen TV, my surround sound, with no petulant, obnoxious audience members there just wanting to be part of that experience of watching a horror movie clustered together and all reacting in such overt, extreme, and distracting ways. Lee Whannell, I think, tried to make a strategized, specific film. Maybe it has that steely, clinical feel, that postmodernism aesthetic. I don't fucking know. But it just wasn't worth the hour we sat there. So I'm outside having a cigarette. So mine. And that is today's episode. It's been a bit lonely without Laura, but she's actually out working a proper 8-to-4 job, not 9-to-5. I don't know why I'm singing this. I don't know the majority of the lyrics. But yeah, thank you for joining me. Thank you for listening to me to ramble. And I highly recommend you get hold of B.R. Jaeger's Amygdotropolis. Why do I always have to germify it in my accentuation? And then the turbulence. Amygdotropolis. Also, Holy Land by Klaus Rasnick. Klaus Rasnick. Fuck! I just can't pronounce names. I get tongue-tied. Balls! But anyway, check out Sweat Drench Press. Submissions are open. Still, we've extended them for the Experimenti chapbook series. Please ensure that if you do submit, that it's on a Word document or any document that is, you know, of any word processing variety or quality. Also, please ensure that it's of an A4 size and beyond 20 pages. So anyway, every word processor or word processor, your page is ultimately always going to be A4 size, but make sure it is A4 sized and it does it. Please ensure that it's 20 pages or longer. More details are on sweatdrenchpress.com, also on Twitter as sweatpress or sweatdrenchpress. There's a variant of things out there. We've got an Instagram, we've got a Facebook, we've got the Twitters. And submissions have been extended till May the 31st. So if you have any innovative, experimental, prosaic, collage, montage, visual pieces that you would like to be part of this release, please join us. Payment is up for discussion. And bartering, there is contracts. This is all done legitimately, real deal shit. We are trying to run the press as professionally and accurately as we so hope to have it be and be personified and appreciated or, you know, viewed as. So Sweat Drench Press, please submit. Those who have, thank you so much. Your Lyndon Waite and Reality and Caliber to something that was just a passion that's been there inherent for a long time, but one that Laura has enabled me to achieve with her dedication. Thank you for DB for wrangling me and editing these episodes up and getting them out, even in a timely manner, in as much of a sense that he doesn't believe he is, but he is. It's much appreciated for him offering me this platform and this the freedom and space. One of the greatest guys to work with. So if you have a podcast, don't reach out to him, because you've already got far too many under his... under his roof. I don't want to encourage loads of people to go, I've got a podcast, and he's like, Zach, you motherfucker. But thank you for joining me, and I hope to hear from you, see you. I can't do anything right. I hope to see you. I hope to hear from you. I can't see you because this is a podcast. Yeehaw! Anyway, I'm going to go because I'm just warbling on. But thank you so much for joining me, and stay groovy. Hail to the king, baby.